All right, Tim at New York Comic Con. I'm here with Jim Zub. Jim, you're a great guy. You're a great writer. You can draw a little bit. You can do a little bit of everything. But I have one major question, because you're using a major character for me, character I love, in a story, and I got to know how that's going to happen. I'm talking, of course, about Moon Knight.
Nice.
So I just got to know. I don't have to know everything. We don't need the spoilers, but I'm very intrigued. Moon Knight in, I assume, a time travel-y kind of story with Conan?
Yes. So there's a comic starting in December called Conan Serpent War. It's a 4-issue miniseries event that basically is bridging a bunch of Robert E. Howard characters and Moon Knight on an epic sword and sorcery adventure. So you've got Conan the Barbarian, a character called Dark Agnes, another one called Solomon Kane, and a relatively obscure Robert E. Howard character called James Allison, all being pulled together along with Mark Spector on a very weird, kind of twisted adventure that's going to cross some really funky bits of the Marvel Universe with the Hyborian Age.
I like that. That's very... I heard it and I was like, is that right? That's just so unique. It's unique, but it could be very good, and I'm very excited. I saw your name attached, and I stopped worrying.
Okay.
You know, I start hyperventilating into a bag when I see Moon Knight. and it's a good time for Moon Knight with the TV announcement. You going to try to get in on writing an episode or two? Or?
Oh, man, I would love Moon Knight. I think he's a really, really cool character. He's moved into such amazing spaces. One of the things I love about that era of characters and those kinds of, I wouldn't say obscure, because he's not an obscure character, but the characters who have had these short run series where you can really mix things up, you can mess with them in fun and funky ways, right? And for me, it was sort of like, even though he's always been a street level character, but there's that supernatural element that churns underneath it, right? So how do we mix some of those elements with the very earthy kind of pulpy stuff of the Hyborian Age? And the connection point between the two is really Set, the serpent god, right? Obviously in Conan, you know, Thothamon and Set and all that stuff in Stygia is very intrinsic to the setting. And, you know, Khonshu and Moon Knight have battled against the forces of Set in the past. So it's a bridge for us to be able to bring that stuff together in unexpected ways. And I think people are really going to enjoy that fusion. And that there's more connectivity there than I think people realize.
Yeah. That's a very good concept. I know they just did the Moon Knight annual, which had him fighting Kang.
Right.
And it was an idea where Khonshu, even though he always treats Mark like a jerk, he's like, oh no, you guys take care of this problem. And I like that you're kind of doing a similar idea where it's like, yeah, I'm not going to treat you like a jerk. I need you.
Yeah, there's a... The threat in this particular thing is... When I discussed it with Mark Basso, my editor, I was sort of saying, look, these gods, they move outside of linear time. They move outside of regular reality. So, you know, Set is attacking on multiple fronts, multiple times. This isn't something that can just be easily solved. We need, you know, multiple heroes moving parallel to try and stop it. And that's kind of, there's a lot of fun inherent in that. And, you know, a mashup for a mashup's sake isn't necessarily a good story. So it was about finding the right characters with the right personality elements to play off of. So for example, you've got Dark Agnes, who, if you get right down to it, is kind of one of the key pieces of source material that created Red Sonja. The original Red Sonja in the Robert E. Howard stories is not the she-devil with a sword from Hyrcania. She's not in Conan's time at all. She's a very, very different character. But Roy Thomas took the name and merged it with kind of the personality of another Robert E. Howard character called Dark Agnes, who also isn't in the Hyborian Age, but more of her personality and her attitude comes from that character, Agnes. So teaming her up with Conan is sort of like a classic in the making, because it is really those original ingredients. Then you've got Solomon Kane, who is this Puritan monster hunter who is 100% certain of his mission and his faith, with this pagan Moon Knight who has interacted with his god directly and doesn't like it. So they're like these kind of two opposing opposites that are crashing into each other, which I find really fun to write. The way they contrast and play off each other, I think readers are really going to enjoy.
That sounds really intriguing.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you, maybe you know, maybe you don't, but you did the Alpha Flight True North story with all Canadian creators. Did you guys force Ed Brisson to do the lettering?
No, Ed actually, like, maniacally pushed himself forward. He used to be a professional letterer.
On Captain Canuck, correct?
Right, and so he wanted to, well, on his own indie stuff as well. And so when we said we wanted an all-Canadian creative team, he actually recommended that he could letter it. And our editor was sort of like, oh, that'll be a pain. Don't worry about it. And the closer we got to getting it done, he was like, you got to let me do this. We got to do it. And so he actually got, he had to fill out all the paperwork to be a Marvel letterer. And he's in the system now in both areas just so he could invoice them for the lettering on the book. It was weird sending lettering notes to, like, this Marvel exclusive writer, you know, oh, Ed, can you mix it up a little? This is the way I like to do my lettering on the page there, you know. But he did a great job, of course, you know, and he's, it was a fun little extra when we were putting that book together.
I really like that because I saw all the names. I'm like, oh, cool, Zub, we got Brisson. And I was like, oh, Brisson is lettering. Yeah. I was like, I just had to know.
There's no other Canadian letterers at Marvel, so that was the only way we could do it. The other funny thing was the one thing we couldn't get, we really wanted, Ed laid out the credits page and they wouldn't let him put the U in color. And we wanted the Canadian spelling in there. So.
Oh, come on, Marvel.
I know.
So you've been doing actually a lot with D&D as of late, and you wrote the Young
Adventurer's
Guide. Yes. When I heard about that, I said, what a great idea. How did that come together?
So the kind of publishing that Dungeons & Dragons does is actually planned out a lot further in advance than a lot of the other kind of things I've done. So literally 2 years ago, I was at the D&D offices doing what's called a story push. So in order to keep things fresh and to not get too insular, on every major release, they'll bring in an outside artist and an outside writer to help brainstorm new stuff so that it's not the same people doing the same kind of stuff over and over again. So they asked me to do the story push on the product that would eventually be called Descent into Avernus. And so I was in the office for 4 days hanging out, brainstorming stuff, working on story content and just flavor material. And while we were there, you know, you're in the office and you're going out for dinner and you're having beers. And I talked about how I got into D&D. I first started playing when I was 8 years old. My brother was 12. And the specific elements that really grabbed me about the artwork, about the gameplay, about the narrative, more so than the rules. The team was really impressed with that. So about 6 or 7 months later, when they were talking to Random House, who is their distributor, and Random House was like, we need a product, a bridging product for 8 and up. Like something in that breaks it down into easier pieces. And people who had met, they're like, you gotta call Zub. He's got a really good head for this, and you got to hear his story about specific things that attach to him at that age. You know, pay him for some consulting or something. And by the time we got off a phone call, I was like, I don't want to just throw some ideas at you. I want to propose an actual product. And we optimistically thought we could do The Young Adventurer's Guide to Dungeons & Dragons in one book. And we quickly realized there was so much cool stuff, we could break it into multiple books and do all new artwork, all new writing, and really make these fundamental kind of recipe books. These are the different ingredients that makes a story in Dungeons & Dragons. Here's how you are a hero and what you can do to make your own stories. And that, I was really nervous about it. I felt really good about the possibilities, but you never know how the community is going to accept it. A lot of people, I think at first, we thought these were going to be simplified rule books, and I'm like, there's no mechanics, there's no dice. It's about narrative. It's about coming up with a story idea. If you're sitting at the table, someone's going to tell you when to roll the die. They're going to tell you what your hit points and your AC are. What you need is an idea generator. I want to be this kind of character. I want to go on these sorts of adventures, and here's my role in the adventuring party. And that was what we wanted these guides to act as for young readers or brand new players of any age.
Yeah, I find it very important with D&D that kids are interacting with the correct people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our nerd communities, we have our moments that aren't so great. So.
Well, I think what's amazing now, the explosion of growth of D&D, I think is so much of it is people being able to see, for example, streaming groups online. And so they're learning at their own pace. They're seeing how much fun it is, and then they're deciding what kind of game they want to make. Like when I was a kid, if you had a bad, if your first experience playing D&D was with a dungeon master who was very different in style or maybe was a jerk, you would assume that was D&D. Oh, D&D sucks. Now you can watch people play, see how much fun it is, and go, I want to have fun experiences like that. And if you have a bad game, you go, oh, I don't like that dungeon master, I don't like that adventure, not this game sucks, you know? And it's a very different kind of headspace I think people coming into it have now, thankfully, that they can see the possibilities inherent in it. Yeah.
All right, final question, because I'll let you get back to all the insanity here at New York. My final question for you is, Wayward was amazing, beginning to end. I enjoyed it a lot. Do you have kind of that urge to go do this big, epic, 30-40 issue kind of thing again?
It's funny because, you know, the artists that I work with, you want to keep those relationships going. I know Steven and I have talked about doing another possible project. Max Dunbar and I have done so many different projects together, and we've talked about the possibilities. There's something joyous about working on a long-form story like that and having it. It's like a milestone of your life. I know that sounds very dramatic, but Skull Kickers was, you know, 5 years of development, 2010 to 2015, and I know where I was at every point of that process and how I was growing as a writer and how Edwin was growing as an artist, and the ability to look at that and feel so proud of it being a complete thing. Yeah, I get the itch a little bit. I want to do that now. I want to see what I am capable of now in that same kind of way, and all the things that I've learned. But it is like a long-term commitment. It's like a marriage, you know what I mean? So hitching your wagon to that can be intimidating. And yet, wouldn't that be cool? So I thought about it. It's not happening in 2020, but 2021 maybe? Yeah. Next year is really about focusing on the current projects I've already kind of hitched on to in a very good way, and just put my foot down on the pedal and see how far I can take them.
Awesome. Well, thank you for speaking with us. Please let everybody know where they can reach you online.
Sure. It's really easy. JimZub.com. So JimZub.com. That's the hub for, you know, reviews, interviews, tutorials on writing, and all my social media links are there.
All righty. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.